Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Mapping the College Audition, a podcast where we explore the landscape of the college theater world and try to demystify this daunting audition process. I'm your host, Charlie Murphy, director of MTCA, Musical Theater College Auditions, and today we have a sunny Southern California show lined up for you. Kenneth Noel Mitchell is one of MTCA's longtime faculty masterclass teachers and a truly phenomenal educator. Every time I'm in a room with him, I leave feeling a bit more inspired, and today was no exception. This is another one of our college deep dive episodes where we give you a snackable audio tour into the various great theater programs around the country. Today, Kenneth and I got into the idea of him not being seen in the business, and how USC and he are trying to change the face of musical theater and celebrate unique identities. We talk a bit about training the artist for today, tomorrow, and the future. We talk about how faculty are trying to see potential in an audition room. And Kenneth reminds you to talk to a variety of students at any program so that you don't get that bitter student who didn't just book the lead in their show. Upcoming, we have Ryan Quinn, who is one of my best friends in the world. And that episode, I do everything in my power to embarrass him while he tries to inspire you all. So it's a kind of fun game that we play the entire episode, me being cruel and him trying to be inspirational. And I think it turned out well. But for now, let's get to our episode with Kenneth. Well, it is such an honor to have Kenneth Noel Mitchell on the pod today. Kenneth is a graduate of Florida State University, where he got a BA in acting. He was in the MFA program at Purdue University. As a director, his work has been represented in New York at places like the Public Theater and Soho Rep, as well as regionally all around the country. As an actor, he's performed at lots of places, including the New York Shakespeare Festival, the Atlantic Theater, and many more. Kenneth also has served as the coordinator of acting at the University of Minnesota Guthrie's BFA training program, as well as the founding head of acting for the New Studio on Broadway and the associate chair at NYU. Kenneth is now the director of musical theater at USC. He's also one of our longest standing masterclass teachers at MTCA, and one that each year students just rave about how inspired they were, including this very podcast producer, Megan Cordier, took his class way back in the day. USC is located in Los Angeles, California. They take small classes, approximately 14 students. They offer degrees, a BFA in musical theater, a BFA in acting for the stage, screen, and new media, as well as various other BAs and BFAs in the theater world. Kenneth, how are you doing? It's such an honor to have you on the pod.
Oh, it's so great. I'm so grateful to be here. This is my favorite time of year. Charlie, so good to see you.
You bet. Well, I'd love to start with, you know, I just went through a little bit of a bio, but I'd love to hear a bit about your own background and kind of your journey. You've taught at now three fantastic universities. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got there to where you are now.
Sure. I think one thing I can say is I am also the co-head of undergraduate acting at USC. Mm. And the reason that's so important to me is because of, I believe acting and musical theater are so closely related in our program, and it is the core of the musical theater program. It's really a pleasure to be able to go back and forth between the acting and the BFA acting program, recruiting that group, and then the musical theater, brand new musical theater program. Mm-hmm. I'm also the chair of Young Arts, which we get to see, you know, the national panel. We get to see so many young artists from around the country provide opportunity and scholarship. Mm-hmm. I was born with a disability, and my mother put me in a ballet class, which was a really bad idea. But it awoke in me a need to tell stories, and this need to tell stories in many different ways. And along the way, I at Florida State auditioned for the BFA program. I was told they didn't see anyone like me in the theater or the musical theater, so they didn't accept me into the program. I stayed an extra 2 years, ended up getting roles on the main stage and lead roles on the main stage and becoming, I think, a strong actor. I then auditioned for the major graduate program and was accepted to a major graduate program at the time, but because I stayed in school so long, I need to get a job. So I worked for the airline for 2 years, loading planes, fueling planes, parking planes, you name it, I did that. And then went back to the grad program. They said they would take me, and they had decided they didn't know how to train someone with my disability to be an actor. So I went to Purdue because they had acting and directing, and then went to New York and participated in a showcase where I was told, don't get your head checked done. There really isn't a place for you in the professional theater. You're a really good actor, but we just don't see you. I did the showcase, picked material that I thought was right for me. The next day I called a couple agents and they hung up on me saying, if we want you, we'll call you. Went home that night, and on my phone machine was an agent that gave me 5 auditions the next week. And from then on, my career took a really interesting turn. I wanted to be an artistic director because I wanted to empower myself to create opportunities. So I worked at the Public Theater, New York Shakespeare Festival. I worked at the Drama Bookshop. I opened my own theater company. I became an artistic director. Hated it. And along the way, everyone hated it because it's about raising money. And so along the way, people kept saying, oh, you should be a teacher. I was like, no way. How dare you? You're putting me in a box. And but I did work at Lincoln Center Institute and found this whole multi-intelligence way of training and thought, this is a really cool way to train actors. Mm-hmm. Because the approach is there is a genius in everyone. That everyone has a genius, and you just have to tap into that genius. So I got a job, and part of my job was to create curriculum for public school systems. And there was a new program, BFA, in acting at the University of Minnesota Guthrie BFA training program. It was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And I went there, they lost the head of the program, and they had no curriculum, so I created that curriculum. One of my first students was Santino Fontana, and I created a 4-year curriculum with faculty alongside. And then music kept creeping into all my plays. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if I was directing a Shakespeare, it became Winter's Tale, the musical. If I was directing a Greek tragedy, it became Oedipus, the rock musical. And I thought, there was something in my life that kept reoccurring with music and musical theater where I started. Mm-hmm. And because I was so introverted, I kind of left it. But I wanted to really finish out. So I went to NYU and helped build their musical theater program, the acting component, and then got offered a job at USC building a brand new musical theater program, which is the collaboration between a School of Dramatic Arts, Thornton School of Music, and Kaufman School of Dance. Hmm.
I love it, Kenneth. It feels like you're just like the program whisperer. You come in and you create curriculum and build programs. It's so cool. I'd love to hear specifically a little bit about USC and kind of what you've built and what you're hoping to continue to build with that new program. Sort of like, what would you think it would mean to be a USC student? We heard a little bit about like, acting-wise, but please.
Our mission is to change the face of the American musical theater. And by that is we're welcoming all marginalized voices that don't traditionally see themselves represented in the theater, film, new media, and the musical theater. And we are celebrating those unique identities by training them to be competitive for roles and stories written about their marginalized life. And when I say marginalized, it's ranging from race, culture, gender identity, ability, invisible disability, age, size, really looking at what America looks like and putting that on stage. And we're excited to do that. And it's radically thinking, how do we rethink training so that we're training each student as a unique individual and not the cookie cutter ingenue leading man. Forces also during the pandemic and coming out to really train the creator. So it's not enough that you're telling stories, auditioning for stories, but you're giving the skills to create your own stories through dance, music, theater, and reinventing the future of what this art form is.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Let's imagine, so you've accepted that class of exactly what you want in terms of representing marginalized voices. How are those individuals going to be changed 4 years later? So what will they have learned or how will they have grown in their 4 years at USC?
I think so many of us we're all a great mosaic of different identities within ourselves. You know, we have many identities. We're race, culture, gender, husband, wife, father, son. And it's really, and they're identities that we're ashamed of in life that we celebrate in the theater. Mm-hmm. Those are the stories that are so relevant. Like Dear Evan Hansen, you know, in life, someone with that kind of disability is taught to be ashamed. And in our program, we celebrate what is unique about you, what is special about you. And at the end of 4 years, I hope we can be artists that celebrate what is unique about them and not try and be, we already have Meryl Streep. We don't need Meryl Streep. We need the next you.
Mm-hmm. Why do you find a student might not choose your school? So if they have a number of different really exciting musical theater or acting options, why might they go in a different direction and say, I'm going to go somewhere else?
Well, I mean, there's so many amazing, amazing programs out there. And I've been fortunate to be involved with three, but I know there are. I think it's up to the student, really. You know, if they are really want to go to a program that's dance-oriented, you know, that is the program they should go to. Mm-hmm. If they want to go to a school that's really music-oriented, I think USC is really, we're really trying to look at each unique individual artist and train to their strength and then challenge their weakness.
But you would say that USC is more of an acting focus school, that if that's where you would put the biggest place of that focus?
I think acting is at the core of everything we do, but because the School of Music and the School of Dance are so rigorous. But again, if you're a student that sings well and acts well, but your dance and movement is a little weak, we're going to take you and we're going to train you and bring up your dance. Mm-hmm. We're not looking for the triple threat to come in. We're looking to train you to be a triple threat.
I love that. I'd love to hear, outside of the acting and musical theater program, what does USC afford a prospective student? So what outside of just the theater program could I take advantage of if I went to USC?
One of the things I love about my job at USC, I've been training in the BFA program for many years, BFA Acting, the Guthrie, BFA Musical Theater, NYU. I get to work with the BAs, and the BA program at USC is incredibly, incredibly rigorous. Mm-hmm. I get to work with the BFA actors and train them, teach them Shakespeare. I get to train with the VFAMT. And then there is this amazing MFA acting program and dramatic writing program. So there is a wealth of culture. The BFA Acting for Stage, Screen, and New Media is an incredibly rigorous program, and it is a very diverse program, not training the artist for yesterday, but training the artist for today, tomorrow, and the future. Mm-hmm. And the co-head of undergraduate and myself have just reinvented the curriculum for the BA Acting Program and the BFA Acting Program, really to reflect a more diverse culture and really reinventing actor training that is welcoming more diverse playwrights into the classroom and more diverse methodologies of training into the classroom. So we're not only looking for a diverse student body, and when I say diverse, a wide range of diversity, we're representing them in the playwriting, and we're representing them in the methodologies of training, so it's not just one way of training.
We talked a little bit about how you, as a professor, are going between different programs. How do the different programs interact in terms of a student population? As an actor, if I want to take musical theater classes or musical theater class, people taking acting classes, how does that work within your program?
I mean, most BFA acting programs are pretty rigorous, and they have a set thing. You know, this is, so you can't pick and choose. What I do like at USC is the BA program. You can take musical theater classes in Thornton. You can take private voice. You can decide to take dance. So a BA student has an incredible amount of flexibility and really can provide their own journey, which I think some students really deal well with, this is your plan. And then some students really deal well with, I don't know what I want to do, but I want to try a little of this, a little of that, and then I'm going to focus on that.
We're going to take a really short break. And then after that, we're going to talk about the USC audition process a bit. So we'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
All right, well, we are back with Kenneth. So let's talk a little bit about the USC audition process. In short, what do you think makes a great audition for USC or for you?
I want to see you. We want to see who you are. We want you to have fun. Don't worry about pleasing us. Choose material that you love to do, not the material that you think is going to show range or be slick or impress us. Material that really reflects who you are. So we use that time to get to know you. You have 4 years to train, and you're getting incredible training now. But really, what makes you, what is your point of view in the world? And you don't have to try to be unique. You already are unique. There is no one like you on the planet because no one has lived your life. So just bring that into the room.
I love that. Is there anything you definitely do not want to see in a student audition? Anything that kind of becomes a pet peeve for you or something that you would be a black mark against them?
You know, having made a career beating myself up, you know, oh, that was so bad. I'm so sorry. We don't want to see that. And I think the biggest thing I learned is I'm just going to have fun. You know, someone is giving me a free piano, a free room, and a free audience. I'm just going to perform. And If you don't like it, I'm sorry, because I had fun. And no one can take that away. So come in the room and play.
I love that. How are these answers different, if they are at all, with the pre-screens? Any kind of special advice for the pre-screen audition for that students are doing for you?
You know, we're reviewing the pre-screens and we're giving advice. But my feeling and basically my colleague that I pre-screen with is, don't worry. You're coming to school to learn. You're coming to school. As long as we can see you and hear you, you know, if we get that full body shot, fantastic. If we can see you move, great. But really, you're coming to learn. And so, you know, at the end of the day, when you hit that submit button, then you go back and look and go, oh, I didn't do that. It's okay. We're not going to say, oh, they didn't do a full body shot. So let's not admit them. Mm-hmm. You know?
Totally makes sense. Okay, my favorite question that I get to ask. If you had to estimate for USC, from the artistic decision perspective, how much of the decision in the room is based on what we would call like skills, like musical theater skills, singing, acting, dancing, versus maybe a little bit more of those intangibles of who this person is and what my experience working them with them was. So how much maybe of skills versus intangibles would you say goes into the decision?
I think my colleague and I really want to see raw potential. If you have our dance training, fantastic. Mm-hmm. If not, but we see you can move and we see potential, that's what we want to see. You know, we don't want a finished product. Mm-hmm. You're here to train. And I guess if you're a lifelong learner, because once you graduate from USC, you're not done. Mm-hmm. It's only the beginning. I still read the acting books and redoing my syllabus every year because it's all changing. And this industry, based on Zoom and recording, is going to keep changing and keep transforming. And so I would say the hunger to be a part of that and to be inventive.
And then I know USC is such a rigorous academic school. So for you, how much is based on the artistic ability versus the academics, or how do those work in the admission?
So we submit who we want, and then admission, not FDA admission, but USC admission, will look at your transcript and they will make a decision, and then they send it back to us, and then we fight with them, and you know, and but ultimately that decision is in their office.
Would it be fair to say that if I'm not at the USC's normal standards, but I'm artistically strong, that I do have a chance for some wiggle room? Or do most of your students have to have USC's academic standards?
There have been the rare occasions and that we have been able to fight for that. And we do have a brand new dean. So I don't know.
Dean, if you're listening, here we go.
I hope. You know, and we will be pushing for that, because as we're trying to broaden the range of voices in the room, there are just some kids that don't have the academic support they need to succeed. And yet, they're very smart. When I was in high school, I was a terrible student. And I went to college and loved it and became an honor roll student. So it's a different way of learning.
Totally. Any other maybe final piece of advice for a prospective student auditioning? Maybe someone who's just now beginning their journey, they're about to enter their senior year in a little bit, and they're looking at this whole process. Any kind of advice that you would throw to those students?
Yeah, I would say two things. Go to the campus, feel the vibe. Don't be swayed by a BFA program over a BA program, because they're different and they're both very exciting. Feel the vibe on the campus. Talk to the student. You talk to me, I'm going to say, we're the best program ever. But the students will always say, you know what? Blah, blah, blah. And talk to more than one student, because you're going to talk to the one student that didn't get the lead in the show. And I would say talk to a variety of students. And then ultimately, when you're on that campus, trust yourself. I know for me, I knew I wanted to live in New York. more than anything. I was from New York, moved to Florida. I knew if I had gone to NYU that I would have not ever gone to class. I would have been every Broadway show. You know, I knew I had to go to a town that had nothing else going on except school for grad and undergrad. That's who I was. So you should ask yourself, some students come to NYU or Pace and they're great programs, and because the theatrical community is so vibrant, it energizes them to focus. You know, ask yourself, do I want to be in a big program? You know, because there are so many benefits to being around this high caliber of student, or do I need a very small, intimate program?
That's great advice. I'd love to just, a couple other questions and kind of wrapping up. I'd love to talk a little bit about some of the specific challenges of 2021 and beyond, in terms of how the school is adapting to this specific moment, both in terms of questions about, you know, the demands for racial equity that came up a lot this summer, and then also just the newness of a virtual world that is sort of maybe now continuing to infect our theater business. So I'd love to hear how USC is sort of adapting to both of those challenges.
Sure. We have been, USC has been very proactive with EDI. I've been on EDI work way before equity, diversity, inclusion was chic. But we are going to have an office of equity, diversity, and inclusion in the theater, in our new building. We're building a brand new building. We have really looked at how to diversify the curriculum to include a wide range of marginalized voices and methodologies in the classroom. And we have, and now we are in the process, by the co-head undergraduate acting right now, of providing training for faculty in different EDI equity, diversity, inclusion initiative, and really making everyone feel comfortable and really having the conversation every day. You know, having the conversation is at the forefront of every conversation we have. As far as, you know, I've got to say, there were things I did on Zoom in actor training that were better than in the classroom. So there are things I'm going to keep online, like Shakespeare. We did a whole 5-week Shakespeare Zoom unit where we turned off the camera and just listened, using the word, and how could the word create pictures? And then we turned the camera on. So there was a whole great thing. So the whole thing, I teach monitor, and part of monitor is environment. So the great thing with monitor, being in your kitchen with a real refrigerator, not a real food, real music, real water, and not like a box. So, you know, there were these great things. There's also for me a the ability to record a scene and watch it and then go home and sit and press play and pause and take notes and really give better notes. So I think that there were, you know, there were so many disadvantages. We weren't in a room together. We, you act from here up, you know. But there's the virtual, I directed Midsummer Night's Dream and the concept was a dream. So we just used virtual backgrounds. Just all, and it was very magical and very exciting. So I think this is not going to go away. This is a part of our lives. So it's how to make friends with it. But theater, live theater, is never going to go away either. So, you know, it's just one more opportunity. It's an opportunity for us across the country to talk. I'm starting to form an alumni group of actors I've taught in the last 25 years from across the country to get together in a room and do a project. So I think I think there's a lot of hard things, you know, and we need to be back in the room, but there's a lot of things we learn that we can use this kind of crazy world.
And do you know, are you continuing the Zoom auditions in any way as we look at next year?
So we're doing the pre-screens online, and then we're looking at a callback weekend live. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, we're trying to stay flexible with Delta and all that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Any final thoughts? Anything you didn't get to get in there today in terms of thoughts that you have about the school or thoughts you have about the process that you wanted to throw our way?
No, I just think what Music Theater College Audition provides is so great for the students and also the opportunity you provide for emerging teachers. Mm-hmm. A couple of your coaches are my students, and it's so great to see them work and go, oh, you heard what I said. Cool.
So nice.
You know, I think it's a great opportunity because a lot of these programs just teach students how to audition. Mm-hmm. And I think this program teaches students how to begin an artistic journey.
Oh, well, that's very nice to hear reflected back. That's certainly our goal, is to do that. So that's great to hear the success of it. If people were wanting to follow USC, where would they do so if they were, I don't know if you're a Instagram social media person, do we know how to @ and tag them?
I think USC, I don't do any of that. I do Facebook, but I think USC has an Instagram. Just go to USC School of Dramatic Arts and all the info will be up there.
Right. And we'll throw those in the show notes from the episode so that people can click for finding the appropriate @. Kenneth, it was such a pleasure to get to chat with you today. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Kenneth as much as I did. I just find him to be such an articulate and inspirational man every time I get to speak with him. So it's always such a joy. Something I want to just highlight that he talked about briefly. He talked about that idea of, you know, we want to watch you have fun in the room and not kind of cut yourself down. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I think it's such an important point for young artists to hear. As I've worked with young artists, especially in that 15 to 17 year old range, I've noticed like a significant increase in the amount of apologizing that I've seen in the past 15 years. And when I say apologizing, I can literally mean like saying I'm sorry sometimes, but even more often it might be like apologizing with your face or your body for the work that you've just done or maybe the work you're about to do, or often making like a self-effacing comment before your work or maybe sometimes after your work. I can't say for sure where it comes from, but I suspect that there's this like great fear of being cocky in the room, as if we have this image of like this huge diva that's so full of herself that she thinks she's too good for the room she's in and too good for the people around her and all those things. And of course, this would not be the goal. I'm not telling you to help be that diva, but it's also not a character that we see very often in the audition room. Much more often, in striving for that kind of quiet confidence, which we want the kind of quiet confidence as opposed to cockiness. But much more often in striving for that, we see this like incredibly loud humility, which is just as much a defense mechanism as that kind of cocky diva character is bringing in, right? It's just a slightly more palatable shield to prevent us from meeting the real you. The most common places I'll see this in the audition would be in the slate, where sometimes like a choice that you're making maybe in material is undermined before it's even performed. Sometimes right after the piece, where a performer will kind of like comment with their face and body to apologize for a vocal mistake, or maybe there was a line flub. And so they'll kind of let us know that wasn't the best I can do it right after they did it, right? They'll jump right out right after the last line. Or sometimes in the interview, where they'll try so hard to sound humble about their skill set that it sounds like they're telling me why I shouldn't accept them into the school instead of why they should. In fact, I'll find when I ask a student about what their strengths are, maybe in like a mock audition scenario, the most common place they'll start is telling me about their weaknesses, and then maybe they'll get around to their strengths maybe. So I think for everyone, as a practice of vulnerability, I do think it is worth practicing the art of non-apologetic art making. So what does it feel like to finish your monologue or song and just stand there and breathe, landing the plane of your artistic work without apologizing for the bumpy ride? If you're practicing answering a question of why you think you might be a good fit for a program, what does it feel like to answer that question without just telling me all the reasons you're not right for this program? I promise if you're a nice and humble person, I'll see that without you showing me how nice and humble you are. But I feel like if you're not able to advocate for yourself in the room, who will? So I think that is worth all of us practicing and just seeing what that feels like. It will be uncomfortable for a period of time, but the more you practice it, the more comfortable you'll be in your discomfort. Even though it's never going to feel completely natural, to stand there and say, that's the work that I did. I did that work. And just let that be, as opposed to feeling like I can only live in it if it's my best possible ever artistic work. Can I sit and go, that's the work I did today on a Tuesday at 4 p.m. That's what I did. And just let it be there and let us comment on it. Let us have the reaction to it, as opposed to you feeling like you need to let me know that you can do better. Even though I'll assume, of course, you can do better. Hopefully, you're going to go for 4 years and do better and better each time you do work. Well, if you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more of me talking about vulnerability, please hit that follow button. We would also really appreciate you if you were to rate and review us where you found us. We suggest a 5 stars if you love Zoom theater and an ironic 5 stars if you miss live theater, which I certainly do. You can also reach out to us with questions for the pod at mailbag@mappingthecollegeedition.com. If you're interested in working with MTCA for help with your individual prep for your college audition journey, please check us out at mtcollegeauditions.com. To my young artists out there mapping their journey, keep changing the face of American musical theater. We'll see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.